know, there's a bit of a trade-off. Maybe I want to add a bit of a flavor to your summary. Is that like, you know, if you put too many validations in an early stage of the project, you can very easily kill your idea or kill your project, because like, you know, it might be too heavy. Like, you know, maybe you haven't thought through your idea enough, and like, you know, you, like, so it might be, let's say, dangerous for a project. So I guess what you would want to do, there is this exploration phase where you explore the ideas, where you try to validate, get intuition about the data, understand the data, things like this. And then once you come up with the final model and you have a good understanding, including the understanding that was provided by the experts from whatever domain you are tackling now, it's a moment to open up maybe for these kind of validations. And then...
All right. So hello and welcome everyone to whoever's listening to this particular podcast on YouTube, Apple, Google, Spotify, or any other platforms. I am Jayesha and I'm a PhD student at Arizona State University. I invite machine learning engineers, researchers, entrepreneurs to talk more about their current work, insights into their journey, and getting started with it. And for this particular podcast, we have Michael Drotzdahl, who is a research scientist at Facebook AI Research with major research interests in computer vision, machine learning, and medical image analysis. He received his PhD in computer science from University of Barcelona. We'll be talking about his journey into research, some open research questions, how research projects look at the intersection of AI and medical research, and more about democratization of AI research. So, Michael, welcome to this podcast, and so glad to have you here.
Yeah, welcome. Thanks for having me here.
So just to get started and to learn more about your journey into AI, can you tell more about your interest into research into AI? How did you get started with it? And what really interests you the most about machine learning?
Yeah, so like I think my story, like, you know, about like, you know, joining AI and machine learning in general, I would say, started quite early. I think when I was like in primary school, I was always excited about doing math, and I really like doing those, like, you know, puzzles, mathematical questions, and trying to answer them. And then, let's say, at some point between the primary and secondary school, I think I discovered algorithms. So I was like, also, like, you know, very excited about, like, you know, the idea of writing rules, that we can provide input to those rules, and we could, like, you know, really get very variable and diverse output out of those rules. And, like, you know, if you keep on digging in those algorithms, you could see, like, you know, they could really build very complex, let's say, programs and very complex systems just by, like, you know, coding up those things. And it was, like, very impressive to me. Therefore, I decided to study informatics at my hometown university in Wrocław, where I, like, you know, by studying informatics, you discover that there's, like, you know, some different subfields in computer science, and one of the subfields was machine learning, where basically you have the ability of using a large number of data to basically discover the algorithms, let's call it, like, you know, a bit in a hand-wavy way. That, you know, by feeding a lot of data points, you just don't need to write the rules anymore. You can just, like, you know, learn the rules from the data, and then you could see that those rules, like, you know, generalizes to different scenarios, like, you know, for example, an image classification setup. Like, you know, if you have enough images of dogs and cats, you can build systems that can distinguish between those two without any particular intervention on our end. Like, we don't need to write any rules. We just need to write machine learning system that learn from the data, and then, you know, everything is solved. So I think this is the like, you know, my inspiration, motivation for doing AI or machine learning in particular.
Right. So I think the idea of automated learning from data is the major motivation for you to get started with AI.
Yeah. This is how it all started. I guess then with the time, I guess I started discovering different flavors of machine learning, like, you know, what it really enables us, and, like, you know, what are the interesting questions that's around this topic. And also, like, you know, I always was interested somehow in the healthcare domain, like, you know, because my grandfather was a medical doctor, so, like, you know, there was a bit of discussions always at home present. So like, you know, I think it was natural for me to start thinking, like, you know, how we could apply those systems and those ideas in the medical domain.
Right. And talking more about the research works that you have been doing at the junction of AI and medical research. So can you talk to us more about your current projects at Facebook AI that you are doing?
Yeah, sure. I guess, like, you know, so I guess my story of doing medical imaging research, or, like, you know, healthcare research and machine learning started with my PhD. So then I was working on wireless capsule endoscopy, where we're trying to basically do biomarker discovery with wireless capsule endoscopy and computer vision systems and machine learning system and things like this. So this is where it started. And like, you know, I continued somehow doing things that were somehow related to the healthcare domain, not always healthcare domain, but, you know, I always have, I guess, some project that's active in this domain. So like currently, the project that I'm involved in at Facebook AI research is around the fast MRI project. I don't know if you heard about it. So
yes,
the
yes.
General idea of fast MRI was like, you know, we want to build MRI, like we want to enable MRI scans to be faster by acquiring less measurements and using machine learning and AI system to complete the missing information. So in particular, here in Montreal, we're working on one particular project that was maybe less concerned with the reconstruction process, so basically obtaining the image from the MRI machine, but rather on the signal acquisition process. So like, you know, if you think about MRI, you could, like, you know, at least from the machine learning point of view, it's an exciting way to think about it, that you can control this MRI machine and maybe, like, you know, instead of providing a fixed trajectory that represents the information that you acquired in the MRI scan, you could maybe have a machine learning system that controls which acquisition to take next and which acquisition to provide to the reconstruction system. So that you can have, like, you know, this active signal acquisition with the goal of reconstructing the MRI images.
Right. And one of the few things that even I realized when I started my journey into research for medical imaging analysis is it's pretty much kind of slightly deviated from the standard machine learning research, right? Like most of the applications that you use into medical image analysis is much more varied than other standard computer vision algorithms. So in terms of medical research, what kind of challenges did you face at the initial time? Like straight away applying machine learning algorithms to medical data sets is not the easiest way to go forward, right? So what kind of challenge did you see in specific to the application of into the domain of medical research while trying to use machine learning algorithms?
Yeah, I think that, like, is a very good question, and there's a lot of challenges. I don't think that maybe my answer is specific to really specific to medical imaging or healthcare in a way, because I feel like, you know, so I think that the main difference with, like, you know, maybe doing research in medical imaging is, like, you know, who like it's defining who the stakeholders of whatever you're doing are. And this, I feel like this is the main difference with respect to maybe, I don't know, let's call it vanilla ML research, where maybe you are not too concerned about who would be using this technology. But in medical imaging, like, say, from the very beginning, from the very moment we start, this is something that is very present in all the discussions, when, like, you know, even when starting to come up with the initial idea of what we'll be solving. And so, well, I think the main difference with maybe other subfields of ML, or, like, you know, or maybe not all others, but let's say the things that distinguishes somehow medical imaging is the fact that you really need to put many people from different subfields on the same page. And it would include, like, you know, doctors that, you know, might be using technology that one day might be deployed, patients that, you know, might be basically also be somehow users, because they will be, like, visiting doctors and, like, you know, they will be taking different kind of examinations that might involve somehow machine learning system or AI. It also might include, like, you know, clinicians who are doing research using machine learning tools. Like, you know, for example, when they try to discover a new biomarkers, or maybe, like, you know, they're trying to discover new drugs and things like this. So I feel like, you know, my first quick short answer to your question would be, like, you know, that the biggest challenge is really, like, you know, to putting all the stakeholders on the same page. And it really requires a lot of legwork from the researchers. So, like, you know, the complexity sometimes is less on the algorithmic side, but more on, like, you know, talking to people and understanding what are their needs, what really has to be done. This kind of thing. Because, like, you know, sometimes I feel like that machine learning engineers have a tendency of, you know, trying to solve problems that might not necessarily be the problem for the clinicians or doctors. And because, no, because we have this tendency, we'd like to try, like, you know, the newest and the best in the ML field. But, you know, sometimes this is something we don't really need to address the problems that are the most important for the clinicians.
Right. So I think in towards the medical research, I think the research that drives is much more task-oriented research rather than the algorithmic algorithmic research oriented tasks, I think. So it's the applications that how you deploy these models really drives the research, rather than trying to build the best model that can solve and maybe build the next biggest thing that can counter CNNs. So I think that is what really drives, I think. Right. And in terms of while you're working on this, do you think, like, if you see most of the algorithms, right, like in computer vision, CNNs and a lot of other attention based models that come out very recently, do you think these medical research I see as a much more application oriented research? So you use these already existing computer vision algorithms and try to apply to the task that is at hand and maybe then improve or fine tune those architectures according to applications. But do you think standalone as a medical research at the junction of AI can help us develop better architectures that maybe were originated from the medical research in the junction of AI, and then maybe we put back to the original computer vision community? Do you think those domains are that much broad enough for researchers to develop their own architectures that was initially developed on a medical data set and that was so good that it would start propagating to other domains for an applied application?
Yeah, I think it's also another good question. So I think it's hard to answer those because, like, you know, we are a bit guessing here. So I just want to make this upfront. So I guess my take on this would be, I do think that in medical imaging, there's a lot of space for modeling contribution. Because, like, you know, the way I tend to think about it, that the modeling contribution really comes out of the understanding of the problem and understanding of your data. Like, you know, and this is something that you know, maybe we should be doing more in medical imaging. Maybe it's done enough. Like, you know, it's something that's there. So there is definitely a space for the contribution in terms of the building models. But the question is, like, you know, will those models translate to computer vision community? I don't know. But also, I would like to say maybe this shouldn't be the objective of, like, you know, whatever is being developed in medical imaging community. Like, you know, maybe, like, you know, at the end of the day, what we really care about solving particular tasks, the same way, like, you know, computer vision community tries to, like, you know, solving particular tasks they have at hand. Like, you know, if you are doing recognition in computer vision, you will try to build the better models to recognition. What really happens is that, like, you know, we could show that there is some kind of transfer from, like, you know, recognition models, or, like, you know, that's been deployed on, like, you know, developed on computer vision data to medical imaging data, that's fine. But maybe the transfer doesn't go the other way around, and maybe, like, you know, maybe we shouldn't be targeting it. Maybe it's more like, you know, understanding whatever problem you're trying to work with, and then, like, you know, finding the best model to do this problem. Because I do feel that, you know, there is a lot of potential for impact within medical imaging community. Like, you know, I don't think we need to try to really go to computer vision community to create this impact. I guess maybe this would be
answer. And in your personal projects, or maybe during even your time during doing your PhD, was your pursuit towards focusing more on theoretical research of machine learning, or was it always application oriented? That I want to focus on this biomarker discovery, but were you inclined on the theoretical aspect of doing research on machine learning architectures, or let's say maybe improving the loss functions in general? Was your focus ever on that, or is it your focus in general at Facebook?
Yeah, so I guess my first, like, answer to your question is, like, you know, what's really the difference between, you know, theoretical and applied, especially within the context of deep learning? Because, like, you know, the boundary seems to be very blurry in many cases. So, like, you know, I think maybe it's best not to, let's say, try to categorize them, like, you know, more applied, more theoretical. Because at the end of the day, everyone tries to solve a particular problem, or, like, you know, maybe the problem might be, like, you know, to build additional understanding. But, like, you know, to answer your question, I feel like, you know, sometimes we need to be practical, or more, like, you know, maybe more pragmatical in a way. So, like, if you are really working on a loss, like a new loss for something, so, you know, there are some standardized benchmarks that your machine learning community accepts more than the others. So, like, you know, for example, if you want to show, I don't know, good architecture, then you want to claim, like, you know, good representation learning skills, like, you know, you probably should try directly ImageNet. There is really no point of doing it on some kind of, like, specialized medical imaging data set. You would want to, like, you know, find the right data set, the question you're asking. But, you know, you can ask very interesting questions on medical data also. Like, so it's, to me, it's more like, you know, understanding what is the question that really excites you, and what is the best setup and community that would appreciate the most the solution that you're trying to propose. And this is how you should decide which data to use. If you have a freedom, let's say, at your university, because sometimes, you know, there are some constraints with respect to the funding that people get. So, like, you know, sometimes, you know, you just cannot maybe publish freely, but, you know, if you have this freedom, like, you know, just ask those questions and see what's the best data set to use for the idea that you have.
Right. So I think talking about challenges and data sets, one of the most common challenge that we face when you get started into this field is data set. And even, I guess this is 2021, I see still people, researchers complaining about data sets. And I think it's not an issue that can be easily solved from a medical standpoint. So I'm assuming even you would have faced such kind of roadblocks when you get started into these challenges. Have you explored the idea of working with only small data sets? And like, what are the techniques that you think have a very strong potential to solving the problem of small data sets? It's especially like, I have seen, like, if you are working with a very specific disease that has a very small data set, transfer learning has a lot of rebuttals from review perspective. Like, I cannot just use a model that was trained on some other highly relevant disease and just use that model and fine tune on my small data set. So how do you think, and feel free to take this as an open opinion from your perspective, is how do you see this challenge of small data set from your perspective, and what do you, in your literature that you have read in the past or in present, which techniques you think are having or maybe might have a best shot at solving these problems?
Yeah, it's a very good question. I think it's very relevant. I would say it's beyond medical imaging community. Like, you know, in many domains, people really are struggling with training systems in low data regime. I think going back to your, like, you know, first part of the question, yes, I was involved in, like, you know, to say collecting data from patients when during my PhD. Like, you know, there were medical doctors at university at the hospital Valdebron in Barcelona who were basically acquiring data for our research. So, like, and we could see, let's say, very closely, like, you know, how painful it is, let's say, to really acquire a lot of data points and to be able to train those models. And, like, you know, on the other hand side, like, you know, whenever we as machine learning researchers are being asked about, like, you know, how many data points you need, we say, like, no, the more you give us, the better it is for us. And, like, right. You know, there is always this discussion that goes there. But yeah, like, you know, it's hard to get a lot of data. Therefore, like, you know, we really need to think how to train those models with limited number of data points. I think, like, you know, part of the answer to this question will be that I gave you, I guess, in the previous question a bit, like, you know, that at the end of the day, the easiest maybe way to do your model data efficient is to introduce good inductive biases in your model. So, for example, if you understand very well the problems you are solving, or if you understand very well, I don't know, the data, like, you know, or you have an expert in the domain, like, you know, working with you on the project, you can always get, like, you know, some additional knowledge that maybe it should be built in your model somehow. So this is always helpful, and it always, like, you know, it basically, if you, the more, let's say, that kind of priors you introduce in the model, the easier it will be to train your model and show good performance. So I think this is something that I believe has a potential. I also think that, you know, transfer learning has potential, but as you mentioned, like, you know, we need to be careful with transfer learning because there are all those issues now around bias that, you know, we could introduce by doing transfer learning. And, like, you know, there is the issue, I think we didn't cover it when talking about the specificity of medical imaging research, that, like, you know, there's basically, whatever we do, at the end of the day, it's to improve decision-making in the healthcare, or, like, you know, at least simplify the decision-making for medical doctors. And you know, it's a bit challenging task in a way, because, like, you know, the algorithm to be developed can really influence the decisions that the doctors will be making. So there is, like, you know, additional risk there. So therefore, like, you know, by trying to solve maybe low data regime with let's say training with transfer learning, and, like, you know, we might be like, you know, transferring maybe from some particular disease, and then, like, you know, our representation will be biased towards one disease. So, like, you know, everyone will start showing symptoms, like, you know, in our system of this particular disease. So it might be very dangerous, like, from this point of view. Although, just to clarify, I don't think that machine learning system will be taking decisions for the doctors. It will be more like, you know, assisting the doctors to make a decision. This is another thing. And then maybe last thing that I think might be somehow useful and beneficial is like, you know, the whole idea of multimodal learning, where like, you know, we can pull together multiple modalities. And I think medical imaging has this potential of like, you know, that really by looking at one particular, as a patient, like, you know, we look from the perspective of different tools and different tests. So like, you know, there is a lot of multimodality present in the medical imaging data. And this is something that I guess definitely could be leveraged to, again, improve the training in terms of low data regime.
Yeah, I agree with your second last point a lot, because one thing that I'm learning within my few months of starting into research is the any researcher who is trying to work at the junction of AI plus medical research is to understand the fact that how much AI models are scrutinized at the end because of the fact that you said, because the results are so much sensitive. So a lot of medical experts will ask for the credibility of these models, and that really lacks in general, and we all know. But when we work in the standard computer vision or language processing communities, the sensitivity factor is fairly low because the data generated are maybe artificial data sets or hand curated data sets. So I think that is one thing even I'm learning a lot, that even if you apply the best model that is out there, like ResNet, DenseNet models, but the results that come out are questioned and scrutinized a lot, that how much relevant is this particular model. And yeah, that really makes a lot of sense. And in terms of one other architecture that is highly talked about recently is the GANs. What is your standpoint of using GANs for any kind of applications within the medical data? Let's say it is for imputing data sets for some time frames within different modalities, or let's say just basic data augmentation. I have seen a lot of good papers coming out, like Matt Gantz and a lot of other papers that follow that have a very high claim of saying that these data sets are highly artificial, but again they are very likely to resembling to the closest structure. But a lot of people still do not agree to the point that the generated images would have a similar distribution of disease localities or tumors or any kind of specifics. So what is your opinion on that particular aspect? Like, do you think GANs in its own architecture of how it is built can really solve this issue, or is it just like a aid to improving decision making?
Yeah, I think it's a great question. Like, I think it's like, you know, in general, maybe generative models, like, you know, what's their use in healthcare? So I think that they, as you said, like, you know, there's a lot of exciting research going on, and you know, people are trying many different things, and it's cool and it's great. I think like it goes back to what we discussed previously, like, you know, that we just need to be careful how we use that kind of systems, and we really need to be sure that whatever we are introducing by using generative models, for example, in medical imaging, we are not introducing some kind of artifacts. Like, you know, I think this is something that has been like already pointed out and mentioned in the literature, like, you know, that in particular of like, you know, generative adversarial networks, a particular example of generative models can introduce some kind of hallucination. But I would say that probably any kind of generative model can introduce some kind of, let's say, hallucination in the system. Or could, you know, could reflect maybe the biases already in the data set, and this is not what we really want to, like, you know. So we really need to be mindful how we use those systems, I would say. But, you know, I think that research along those lines, it's great, and it's moving forward, and it's definitely showing some signs of progress. But yeah, I would say that it's about being careful, like, you know, what distribution we're really modeling with those models, and how do we use them? This, like, you know, in the whole system, again, like, you know, what you said, like, you know, there is a lot of scrutiny that we should be, you know, we should be paying a lot of attention to how we use the system. Basically, this would be my answer to your, I guess, to your question. Like, you know, and then also within the context of fast MRI, we also try to play a bit with, like, you know, some GAN models. But, you know, at the end of the day, we never really use like GAN models for MRI reconstruction for their purposes outlined. We were not like 100% sure that, like, you know, the hallucinations will not be problematic there. So
Right. Yeah, because an interesting thing that I recently learned was the fact that if you are using some kind of, let's say, encoder decoder architecture, right, to map or maybe harmonize two different modalities of data. So the reason most of the medical experts prefer encoder decoder architecture over GANs is because encoder decoder architecture is basically pixel to pixel mapping, versus GANs are trying to learn a distribution of the whole data set. And what I learned from, like, one of the experts had a PhD in medical physics. So he understands how these scanners work and how the data sets are acquired and how the physics of these scanners work. And I learned from that that the two modalities that I was using for PET imaging do not have the same architecture of how the way these medical data sets are generated. But yet, if you, like me as a very naive CS researcher, we just see these nifty formats of images, right? They look highly similar, but it's not visible to us as the human eye. And that is when he pointed, even if you built a very good architecture that has, let's say, more than 99% of Pearson correlation even then, but there is no medical significance or like from a scientific fundamental significance of the mapping that is learned, because it is not even like highly, highly non-linear. So that was the kind of scrutiny I got. And I was like, this is interesting. I didn't know, because nobody knows how these scanners work, right? So that is one thing that, like you said, is really critical, is to verify whatever the results we are getting and then take step forward. So yeah, that really makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, but I also think, like, you know, one interesting point here that you bring up, like, I think it's, again, like, you know, maybe reiterates on the fact that, like, you know, we should really talk with different people involved in the project and try to learn what are, let's say, the characteristics of the data point. Like, you know, at the end of the day, there is a generation process of a data point that normally ML research would work on. And, like, you know, understanding generation process is always a good thing, and yeah, it's helpful. But at the same time, I also think that like, you know, I would expect with the time, the ML systems and ML components being pushed closer and closer to the actual physical device. So, like, you know, because now it seems like, you know, there's a lot of research in medical imaging community that's basically devoted to analyze already, like, you know, processed outputs of the medical imaging tools, like, you know, MRI. We just look at the MRI, let's say, image in the form of a magnitude. Like, you know, we rarely look at the K space of the MRI, or, like, you know, and you can look at, let's say, different tools there. So I do think that there is, like, you know, maybe it's not answering to your question about GANs, but there, I was want to say that there is a potential of bringing machine learning closer to the machines, clearly working closely with the expert, like, that he understands how those tools work. But those tools sometimes are extremely complex.
Yeah. And I think your work on FastMRI is kind of along those lines, right? Like pushing the idea of machine learning closer to the image acquisition in its first place, rather than working with it after it is processed and pre-processed and a lot of stuff that goes on. So I think, I'm feel free to correct me. I might have taken some time to read that FastMRI. It was maybe a few months back I read the whole project timeline. And I've read also other projects that I came up with on the FastMRI data set itself. So yeah,
no, that's true. I think that's a correct statement, although I just, to be fair, to like draw a full picture, that's what's in the field. There are like many other approaches to try to do it, like, you know, there is, like, you know, even from the MRI community there are some approaches, like, you know, MRI fingerprinting that tries to, like, you know, rethink the way how MRI acquisition is being done, and, like, you know, maybe rethink how to, let's say, provide this kind of information to medical doctors. I just want to say, like, no, there is a lot of research along those lines, and we're trying to bring machine learning closer to, let's say, devices. And I just maybe want to reiterate that I find it very exciting.
Right. And another interesting thing that I want to ask is, maybe not on the, maybe kind of slightly philosophical approach of these researches, whenever these tools, like, for example, the GPT-3 tool that came out for language generation, a lot of people, of course, from a research standpoint, a lot of people appraised that and a lot of people criticized it. But a few people that definitely pointed out one very nice thing is how it helps us understand consciousness, right? I mean, even though it is a very far-fetched topic, do you think using AI for medical research in general can help us answer some of the underlying questions from the medical research community, rather than just helping medical experts solve certain problems? Because if you see for other tools, like using BERT on language, it has helped us understand some of the key insights. Like, I don't know if you know this very nice article that came out maybe 1 or 2 years back, was when Google Translate started using BERT, right? Deep learning for its translation. So if you want to translate from language A to C, it's easy to translate from A to B and then B to C, rather than doing from A to C directly. So there was one very key insight that came out, that these three languages have a very nice interconnections that none of the lingual experts know. But deep learning kind of found this. So this was kind of a very latent insight that they found out. And a few people, like few news articles, always claim that, okay, AI can help us get closer to consciousness or human consciousness. But strictly talking about medical research, do you think AI can have a shot at answering some of the unanswered questions in medical research? I mean, a first step is AlphaFold, right? That has helped do something. Do you think it has a shot at doing that? And if it is, then what is the exact role of using AI? Is it just a tool to automate and make people, like radiologists' life better? Or are we actually also looking at discovering something in general?
Yeah, that's another great question. I think, you know, there is some evidence, I would say, that I would say that I'm quite confident that the, let's say, machine learning tools will be helpful for clinicians doing, let's say, research in medical imaging, or like in healthcare in general, like, you know, trying to discover new things about health in general. And I would say, yeah, machine learning will be a good tool there, and it will be helpful, definitely. Because, like, you know, given the volume of the data sometimes that people need to understand and read through in order to I don't know, come up with a hypothesis, it's sometimes, like, you know, huge, and it takes a lot of effort, a lot of time. So I would say that there is definitely a space for machine learning in healthcare, let's say, to help coming up with a hypothesis, or, like, you know, to helping us work through the data that we have there. So I'm quite optimistic here that there will be, or there is a space there for.
Right. And talking about these kind of open-ended questions, would you, we did get to discuss few of the open challenges, like limited data sets and using transfer learning to solve these problems. But according to you, and maybe somewhat where it all revolves around your research, what do you think are some of the most open research problems? And I know this is a very, I mean, you can go on for hours if I ask this question, but what is one thing that you think is kind of still not solved or not even close enough to solving that task in terms of talking about AI research specific to medical research community? What do you think, if there was a medical expert that would complain to any AI community, what would be that complaint that, hey, you guys are not working on this and this is a big problem for us? So what would be that open problem that you can say?
I guess I don't know what would be that open problem. I guess maybe I want to make a couple of comments. So the first of all, like, now I would say that I don't think, like, we should maybe use too much the vocabulary of solving something, because I feel like it's not beneficial, let's say, for the, let's say, community or, let's say, people that are trying to understand what machine learning really doing. Like, you know, I think we're making progress. I like more like this kind of framing. So we make progress in different tasks. I'm not sure if we, like, solved any tasks in particular, because, like, you know, it depends a lot of context. Like, you know, what is the you know, particular task you want to work, like, you know, solve, and what's the target, like, you know, accuracy, and then what are the, generalization capabilities of our system and things like this. So I don't think we will, I think we will do a lot of progress. We will do a lot of progress in understanding, like, you know, human body with machine learning. We will do a lot of progress in building better systems. That's definitely. And I guess, like, you know, maybe your question then would be, what is the, I don't know, topic of medical imaging that we should be focusing the most in order to see this progress. So I feel like, you know, there are two aspects. I would say that those are, like, maybe two general machine learning aspects that I would like to maybe see more progress on. Those are also, like, very hard and challenging. So the first one, we already mentioned a bit, it is the generalization of the system that we built. Like, you know, it has been you know, reported in many cases, like, you know, that sometimes we built a very good system that has, like, you know, very good accuracy that may be comparable to some humans on some task in particular, say, hospitals. But if you take the same system and move, let's say, I don't know, a couple of streets away to different hospital, it stops working, or it works terribly. So, like, yeah, you know, that there is this issue, like, you know, how to understand the generalization of the system, or maybe, like, how to understand the limitations within which we could use that kind of systems, like, you know, and this is, I feel like it's a big problem, but also a big research question, like, you know, how we make sure that, you know, we can generalize maybe out of the training data distribution that we have observed at the training time, or, like, you know, in general, like, you know, this is interesting. And also another thing that is somehow connected to it, it's like, you know, when I was saying by when I was saying about understanding the limitation of, like, you know, what is the scope of the system within which the system really works well, can we really, like, you know, describe it somehow? But maybe, like, you know, that there is whole research in the field of uncertainty estimation with deep learning. So, like, you know, I feel like, you know, maybe making the systems, like, you know, provide us some kind of numerical estimates of when they think they, or, like, you know, how confident they are about what they, like, you know, show us what they predict, like, you know, not necessarily about the decision they make, but, you know, at the end of the day, sometimes, you know, we are interested in image reconstruction and we want to see, like, you know, we reconstructed, like, you know, we imputed some frequencies that maybe weren't there, like in case of the MRI, like, you know, so how confident we are that the imputed frequencies are the right frequencies, like, you know, what is the variance of those frequencies, like, you know, that kind of question, I find them interesting. There is a lot of research going on there, but I would like to maybe see more progress.
Yeah, I really like that idea of trying to validate the results from a different perspective, right? Like, even though the results came out, what is the exact reason? And this brings me to a question that I always wanted to ask is, you have worked as a PhD student, so your research work was strictly into academia, and right now you're working at Facebook, which is kind of slightly oriented to application or maybe some kind of industry that it is collaborating with. So we see a lot of, from a research community, we see a lot of papers getting published which have great numbers in its conclusion section or the results section. But yet, in terms of application of how much it percolates to hospitals or any kind of industries or startups that are working on it, is fairly low. So where do you think is the problem? Is it more like the industry is not yet ready for all these kind of research, or is there a big problem of scaling to real world examples? So even though I might publish a paper that solves the issue of predicting a disease using multimodal approach, but nobody's actually using it rather than just publishing it in few papers and getting few citations. So what could be a problem? Is it that the industry is not ready for an application, or do you think these deep learning applications have a major problem when it comes to scaling? Because I think when you're working with Facebook, those tasks would have kicked in back a few years, that scalability is also an issue, right? You want to make these systems robust or reliable so that people won't question that, okay, the results are good, but how do I say that I want to use this? How do I build a trust? So yeah, where do you see the problem of gapping from typical research to, hey, I want to use this in my hospital?
Yeah, I think it's a good question. I don't know where the answer really is. But, like, you know, although I work at Facebook, I'm part of the Facebook AI research. That, you know, our mandate is to do research and period. Like, you know, we are not necessarily doing too much of transfer. Let's say, it's not our main concern. Like, you know, so we are still doing research here. Like, you know, but in order to try to answer your question about what might be missing. So I guess you know, it's hard to say what's missing, but maybe it's good to reiterate that there is a huge gap between you know, a research paper and if you want to deploy it. Then deployment, you can think about different scenarios. It doesn't really have to be, like, you know, it goes to industry, like, you know, and then there is some company that owns the technology. It could be simply, like, you know, you want to deploy it maybe in a research project of some clinicians, you know, or you would like to deploy it in a hospital, like, you know, maybe because, like, you know, you're part of the hospital while doing your PhD, that kind of thing. And the gap is really huge. Like, you know, having a paper is just the first step towards validating your system. But there's really, like, a lot of, like, you know, small steps that has to be done in order to really enable the use of this technology at scale in healthcare. And healthcare also, like, you know, another, I guess, important factor that is that it's really heavily regulated in all the countries. Like, you know, it's not like this that you can just, like, you know, create an app for something. Like, you know, like, if you really want to do healthcare, so, like, you know, you need to go through all the regulations. Like, you know, there are some approval processes and things like this that also puts extra scrutiny on top of whatever you're doing. So I guess the way I see it is, like, you know, the research papers are just, like, you know, the first validation of an idea, but there is still a lot of, let's say, validation along the way that has to be done before an idea reaches the, let's call it the market, or what would be the right word here.
Yeah, I totally agree to that. And I think we hit three or four keywords that brings me to the next question is, you first of all talked about regulations, validations, trust of these models, and then using it in a very reliable format in the market, or maybe basically people who are the end users who do not have a understanding of medical or AI research. So that has been a recent buzz about these terms that most of the community calls as explainability and interpretability of these models, right? So do you think, first of all, I mean, feel free to take your opinion, because I'm not sure if you have been actively working on this particular part, but if you do, how do you understand these terms? Because a part of my thesis is trying to learn more about interpretable AI and hopefully make some models that are not scrutinized as much as hardly than how deep learning or black box models are treated right now. So if you were to define, because you have been working on types of medical data sets like neuroimaging and hopefully other kind of clinical data that is just a basic tabular format of data. So when we talk about interpretability, how do you see from a researcher's perspective? I understand from a end user perspective that, hey, I want the black model to speak to me and tell me what happens, but that's not how black models would be translating to you in natural language format. How do you see these terms when people say, I want to build this model to be interpretable enough? In what definitions would you have as a very naive researcher? Because I think, I mean, you're not naive researcher, but of course in this domain you would be a naive researcher. So how do you define that? And second question would be, do you think this is an important roadblock for moving forward with deep learning on these medical applications?
Yeah, it's a good question. Like, so I personally never worked very closely on interpretability, explainability. So I guess you should take my answers with a grain of salt, because I might be inventing stuff here. And so the way I think about it, interpretability, explainability, I think there's a lot of discussion. That's true around it. So and the question, what really is this interpretability? And I think there were some papers that were trying to clarify the use of the terminology there. And I think the basic distinction there is we could either have the interpretability of the model in a way that you understand all the operations that the model is doing. And and sometimes by understanding each operations, you feel confident using a system. Yeah, you just feel confident, because you know what are all steps in the system. But sometimes, the systems can be very complex, and the understanding each steps of the system might not be enough. And by not be enough, I mean the final user, for example, because at the end of the day, I feel these topics of interpretability, explainability are relevant in the context of our discussion, because the number of stakeholders in healthcare is huge, and we need to if you really want to. Want to deploy those systems, we need to work with those stakeholders, and we need to make sure that that they are on board, they understand what we are doing, and that they feel confident using what we are doing. Therefore, it's important for them to understand. So, I think the best, I guess, person to ask that kind of question in the project is always the person who will be using whatever we are doing. So, I think it's best for them to ask this kind of question. Look, if I would tell you and explain you every step of this algorithm, would it make you feel confident about using it? Or you can flip the question, if the system will provide some kind of explanation why it's showing what it's showing, that would it make you feel comfortable? I feel like it's more like a work with the collaborators in on a project we should be doing if we really want to affect healthcare than anything else, from the point of view. But clearly there is a lot of exciting research in the ML community around those topics, and people are really pushing forward, because I feel like it is important, for us humans, to understand complex system up to some degree. I think the understanding is also a bit of a whole spectrum. It's not that we have to really understand everything, we just need to maybe understand the key components that are there. Or if you think about it more scientific approach, where you just keep on testing your model, and if you all the tests you can come up with, your model really fulfills what you would expect from the model, then maybe it's good enough. I don't know. I'm just speculating here.
No, I think your speculation is maybe right. And if I would, because I have interviewed in the past a few other people who have been specifically working on the idea of interpretability. And one thing that I conclude, and maybe you are maybe fifth or sixth person who is also hitting the same points, is seeing two things that you mentioned, which are very correct, I think, and even in my understanding of the literature and research, is first of all, interpretability would or not be, that won't be a one-shot solution to all kind of deep learning problems. It will always be application-oriented, like you said. I need to work with the people who would be interacting with these models and understand what do they want. And in this case, it would be medical experts. I the model cannot literally explain to every patient for every disease. It has to be very specific. And I forgot the second point, but it agreed with few of the points that you mentioned, that few people said, like, it has to be like the way how we are trying to approach, or how the community is trying to approach, is that has to be a middle way. It cannot be, we cannot reinvent the wheel of trying to make everything explainable, because hey, if it was explainable, linear models can already solve those questions. So yeah, I think that's an important valid point. And
I think that there will be a progress there, but I also think, like, you know, I'm not, like, I think the question or the discussion around here is, like, you know, it's to which degree we really need to provide this interpretability, explainability for those systems to be of use. And I don't know, but I feel this is the debate going on there.
I agree. And trying to move away from your, like, these open-ended research questions, and maybe still at least learn at least few of them, is what are some of the research works that you are following right now, even though you might not be directly working on it as a part of your research, but what are some projects that you are following and you really find them cool enough in terms of the claims that they are making, and you are following what updates they have for the research works? What is one thing that you're doing as of, let's say, 2020 or 2021, like, you're following those research works?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think, like, you know, following up on previous question, I do follow a bit of literature of this interpretability, explainability, to see if there's anything interesting there. But apart from that, I think recently one paper, like, I think that, like, it's maybe not surprisingly got my attention, is the NERF paper, the paper that produces the 3D the reconstruction of a 3D scene from multiple views. So they showed, like, really impressive results with a relatively simple approach, like with neural implicit functions, and they could really, like, you know, reconstruct 3D scene in a very high quality. So, like, you know, maybe the method seems quite simple what they did there, but the results are really impressive. So I was, like, you know, I would say, like, you know, it's a cool paper that appeared, I guess, last year. I really enjoyed this paper. And apart from that, I think, you know, there's a lot of work going on recently on the idea of self-supervised learning, both in the context of language and in the context of vision. I feel like, you know, especially in the context of language, there has been, like, very strong papers that appeared recently. Although in vision, it seems the case that, like, you know, there is also some progress that is being done with recent literature there. I also find it interesting to follow this literature there.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that is one thing even I have been exploring a lot, the self-supervised learning applications. And specifically, I'm trying to get some inspiration even for the working with small data sets. So I think it could have at least some potential for working with small data sets. So yeah, I agree. That is something even that has some good claims itself, but it is yet to be tested for other applications. So
that's definitely interesting.
Right. And now maybe if I can ask a very, very broad question, I know this might be too broad for you to predict this. I like to ask this question for people who are working at the junction of AI and medical research, is what is one thing that you think that could have changed a lot, or maybe changed quite a bit in the next 10 years of applications of AI and deep learning to medical research? What is one thing that you think would be a distinguishing factor in medical research? Like, nobody in the research is adapted to using this, but maybe in 10 years it is kind of a norm for them to use. Like, hey, if I'm acquiring MRI scans, it has to have a machine learning algorithm or something like that. Do you think it would be an integral part of medical research sometime in the future?
Yeah, I guess it's hard to predict those. I think it depends what really medical research would mean for you. I would say, like, you know, like, to answer very broadly, that I would say that, you know, in general, we'll see more and more machine learning. penetrating, I would say, the different, let's say, parts of our everyday life, in a way. Those might be like, probably like, maybe those will not be very like complex systems that we sometimes see in the paper, but some simple ideas we'll get there, and we'll see it. So I guess maybe one thing I'm quite excited about, like, or the thing that might be happening thanks to the use of machine learning and data science and stuff like this and in healthcare, is the personalized medicine. This is something that people were talking for a while already. Like, there is some progress that has been done so far, but I feel like with the like way better machine learning tools that we are developing each year, and better understanding of the problems, like we might, let's say, enable really the use of the personalized medicine, because like without a smart way of processing large amount of data, it might be really hard to do personalized medicine. So for example, like if you push ML to a machine, or like the scanner, then maybe you could, like you could start maybe acquiring personalized scans of people, or like personalized information of people. And this is something I would be excited to see, like if this would happen. I don't know. It's again, I'm guessing rather than predicting here, but this is something I guess I would be exciting.
Right. And on the very same tangent is like when you're working on these projects, like FastMRI is a very popular project. It has a lot of, like, in terms of citations, it has a lot of citations in general, the whole umbrella of projects that has evolved from FastMRI. So when you're working on these projects and maybe interacting with medical experts, do you see, like, what is the kind of trend? Like, are they really believing or maybe trusting these whole applications or pipelines that you're building for whatever application it is? Or is it still, even for projects like FastMRI, who are very mature enough, do they still scrutinize, or are they still worried? Like not in a bad sense, but they're kind of skeptical, or maybe, I don't know what's the right word, but cautious of using those tools into real-world applications. Well, how have you seen those interactions? Do you think they have a high trust versus maybe, or is it like a no, complete no? We are not yet ready for that. Like, how have you seen those interactions?
Oh yeah, like so. In the context of FastMRI, we are very lucky to work with New York University and our collaborators there, who are like great, both like clinicians and great experts on MRI. So it was really great and fruitful collaboration. So like going back, like to your exact question, is it's like sometimes I feel like it's clear that there has to be some convincing to be done. So to convince, let's say, the other, let's say, maybe basically the stakeholders of the system. But so sometimes the right question is like, what are the experiments, or what are the arguments you could use, like being more like rather than trying to buy the belief by explaining them something. Is like, say, like, look, if I show you that kind of experiments and the system works in this way, would you be convinced? And then, like, okay, so let's execute on this experiment. Let's collect, like, new data, and let's try to validate this hypothesis. And the hypothesis, like, comes up the right way. Like, you keep on building this trust by splitting the I don't by basically maybe changing the hesitance of let's say some of the collaborators into something that you can act on. So some kind of actionable items, and you just create another experiment and try to show, like, no, look, whatever we did, like, it works in this way. Is it enough for the system for you to be like confident using this, or maybe there's another experiment you should be doing? Like, so you can discuss more, and then you come up with another experiment, and then maybe collect data. It's like slow process and lengthy, but I feel like it is the best we could do, like, in that kind of situation. Because, like, we don't want people to believe in a system because we believe in a system. It's more like, what kind of arguments you can provide, or what kind of evidence you can provide, or experiments, so that other people also believe in it. Like, there's like, for example, in case of the MRI, there's a lot of discussion, like, should we be doing retrospective or prospective MRI reconstruction? So basically, like, should we rely on the data we acquired in the past to provide good reconstruction in the future? Like, and there are some, let's say, researchers at New York University, like, trying to show, like, that it's a good strategy. And I feel, if I understand correctly, like, that there is some positive evidence along those lines. But I guess this is my I guess answer. Like, try to change the hesitance into an experiment.
Yeah, I really like the whole, like, over the many conversations that we are having right now, is one thing that I'm learning is having more amount of validation steps for all your whole pipeline of using machine learning is really the key forward when we are dealing with medical or any kind of sensitive application, I think. So I think we have at least, let's say, 5 validation steps. Having 10 would be even better, and that would be a step forward for making people believe, and even for us to debug that, hey, this was wrong, this was happening wrong within my knowing or something like that. So that is one thing I'm like, I don't know if that's a good takeaway from whatever you said, but I think having more amount of validations would be good for both the researchers from AI and also from medical experts.
Yeah, I think so. I think there are also, like, you know, different, like, you know, if you think about projects, like, you know, different stages of life of a project, like, you know, maybe in early stages, you don't really need to be too heavy on validations. But, like, you know, there's a bit of a trade-off. Maybe I want to add a bit of a flavor, yeah, to your summary, is that, like, you know, if you put too many validations in an early stage of the project, you can very easily kill your idea or kill your project, because, like, you know, it might be too heavy, like, you know, maybe you haven't thought through your idea enough, and like, you know, you, like, so it might be, let's say, dangerous for a project. So I guess what you would want to do, there is this exploration phase where you explore the ideas, where you try to validate, get intuition about the data, understand the data, things like this. And then once you come up with the final model and you have a good understanding, including the understanding that was provided by the experts from whatever domain you are tackling now, it's a moment to open up maybe for these kind of validations. And then this validation should be strong. And, like, you know, but I guess maybe that, or it should be gradual way of shifting to, like, stronger validation. I guess what I want to say, like, you know, don't start the project by over-validating everything, because then you will have no progress, basically.
Allowing yourself to explore and then open-ended validations, and then maybe start scrutinizing once you have enough confidence that, hey, I made some contribution, now let's try to validate.
Exactly. Around.
I love that idea. Yeah. And yeah, just one last question, because I don't want to hog up off a lot of your time, is, like, this is maybe the most open-ended question that I can ask on my scale right now, is, forget about the application of AI to medical research. Just as talking to an AI researcher or computer science researcher, does the idea of creating human-level intelligence interest you? Do you think that it is within our reach itself? A lot of people still, I know this is a clickbaity thing that people post out in new media articles or something on other journals, that like AGIs and consciousness and a lot of other topics. But do you think, like, when we might laugh at those articles as of now, because we know research, machine learning is not up to the mark. But do you think itself, does the idea of creating human level intelligence is something that would interest you as a researcher? Do you think it's possible?
I was never, like, you know, maybe too attracted by creating human level intelligence. Like, you know, I think it, you know, I do find, let's say, some value, let's say, in studying, let's say, machine learning in general as a way of maybe trying to understand some parts of, like, you know, how human intelligence work. That's cool. It's also good to build systems that are smarter and smarter in a way, like, you know, that they can help us make better decisions. I was never, like, maybe too attracted by, like, you know, building this human level intelligence, although, like, you know, we might get there one day. At least, like, you know, in a very narrow domain, so the domains, you know, so there is some evidence that we could, like, you know, outperform humans, like, in a very narrow task, like, you know. It's there, but, you know, the human level, I guess, intelligence in your question means something way broader. So basically, we have this, like, you know, embodied AI that can act in the world and do whatever human is doing. So I think, like, you know, in such an unconstrained scenario, I'm not maybe too excited about it. I think that there are some domains within which, like, you know, having a good level of understanding, like, you know, very narrow understanding of the world in particular domains, I think it's very beneficial and helpful. And I feel like, you know, this is how maybe medical imaging community was moving forward. And I think, you know, maybe it's the right way of doing, like, you know, trying to solve particular tasks instead of, like, you know, trying to solve everything. You know, but maybe in the future, like, you know, we will be able to build systems that are very versatile and can tackle really diverse concepts of diverse solutions or diverse problems. We will see. I don't know.
I agree to that part. I think the application of AI to medical imaging is strictly application oriented. So we are trying to solve one problem and then we use a maybe top-down approach or something like that. But yeah, I think the research that goes along the lines of reinforcement learning or language generation, they try to, along those research, I think these questions really come up, that are we trying to actually learn something from how, like, I think GPT-3 opened up a lot of questions about consciousness and a lot of ways how we humans deal with, I think, I don't know, the basic understanding of the world or something like that. So yeah, I think, but for medical imaging concept, we are strictly application oriented. So yeah, I agree to that part. Yeah, that's quite interesting. But yeah, I think we are fairly out of time, and I think these were the questions I had for you. But this was really interesting. I really liked, because hopefully I'm starting off in this field, so I'll be following more your work. I also do your follow your work for some time, and this was really interesting. The idea of medical imaging plus deep learning really excites me too. So thanks for answering all these questions, and thanks for being on the podcast. I hope people who are listening to this podcast also find this useful, and people who would have any specific questions, I'll maybe post out your Scholar link and your LinkedIn, so that if somebody is genuinely interested in your work or some other work, they can reach out to you through those channels. But apart from that, thanks for being here, and thanks for spending out a Friday afternoon for me for this podcast.
Yeah, thanks a lot. Thanks for having me on your podcast, and it was interesting and fun chatting with you.